The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. This is a new era of Red Sox baseball. Through every twist and turn, every major development, we are all on this journey together. This is going to be the most honest Sox podcast you're going to hear. No BS, just the truth. I'm your host, Jason Kelly. I'm coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at Color of the Iris. Joining me on the show from Broward County, Florida, is Nick Diamond. Nick, how we doing?
Pretty good. Coming off a disappointing loss here, but doing well besides that. You can find me at NDiamondMedia on Twitter.
Awesome. Good to hear. And also with us on the show from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you?
Little annoyed. We got off to a good start in the series after, I think, winning, what, 6 out of 7? So things were trending upward. You know, a couple of teams that weren't great. Now we were finally facing a very good team with good pitching. See what this offense could do. And it didn't really do that great. I don't have the standings up. Bear with me. Red Sox are one game above 500, 14 and 13. Still good enough for second in the American League East, two games behind the New York Yankees. And Blue Jays right behind us. We'll be facing them next week after this Cleveland series. So it's getting tougher. I think we've squandered what looked to be one of the easier months on the calendar. And, you know, you had the Mariners out east here. You know, they traveled a long way. We couldn't really capitalize on that. I think they had a series out here either in the east or the central before arriving to Boston. But not what we wanted, and we weren't really set up that bad. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough because you have the White Sox come in on Patriots Day weekend, which, you know, it's a lot of momentum behind that. They haven't been home in a while. It's like, okay, it's a nice, good. You had struggles against the White Sox beforehand in Chicago. This is like a nice retribution series. I know they won 3 out of 4, but it should have felt like you should have swept them. And then you got Seattle coming in. And I don't know about you guys. I don't take Seattle seriously. I know they have pitching. But I look at that lineup and I'm like, it's Cal Raleigh and Arozarena kind of driving you guys. Like, Julio Rodriguez still needs to get himself right. Like, I don't know, Nick, like, do you have Seattle as like a real threat in the American League? Or is this one of those teams where you're like, the Red Sox should be better than you? What happened here?
No, the Red Sox should be better than us or better than them. They had a good game plan against their lefties. They kind of destroyed them. They beat Crochet. I know it was kind of a command issue. And Newcomb was just not that good, but they had 9 righties in the lineup. They kind of attacked them well, but I know those are the 2 games they won. So it's kind of disappointing they lost 3, but the Mariners played better than us this series. The Red Sox could have won if they executed a little bit better offensively, probably in the last game, or the bullpen didn't completely implode in game 2, but you should be better than the Mariners, but I don't think they're an awful team. Like you said, the White Sox should have been a 4-game sweep. The Mariners, I would be okay with taking 2 out of 3. 1 out of 3 is, I'm not like out here crying about it, but it's not acceptable against a team that you should be better than.
And Terry, yeah, how do you feel about the Mariners? Because I don't know if you had them in your playoff structure at all.
I don't think I did. I'm trying to pull up last year's numbers versus lefties. I thought they were 9th. Okay. I thought the Mariners were a little bit worse last year against lefties, but they definitely, as Nick said, crushed us. I mean, they put up all those runs against Newcomb, against Crochet, against Justin Wilson in the bullpen. The majority of the runs coming in today, or even through most of today, were all against lefties. So it's frustrating. You know, you look at this team, it just doesn't have an identity. I think about that scene in Moneyball where Brad Pitt's character, Billy Bean, is leaving the Cleveland Indians at the time front office, and he bumps into Jonah Hill's character, and he realizes that Jonah Hill analytically is way ahead of the curve here. And this was in 2002. And Brad Pitt looks at him, he goes, "Who are you?" And he goes, "I'm Peter Brand." And he goes, "Who are you?" And I'm just saying that to the Red Sox right now. Who are you? Like, we don't know. It's been a roller coaster, but we haven't had that sustained run that truly validates them as a good team. And at least a few of us had them at 90 plus wins. So that's by all metrics a very good team. And we haven't had that type of a run yet. And they're scuffling against some bad teams. So I don't know. And I haven't looked at the Guardians matchups. We'll go over that in the next show and make our predictions on the series. But that's not a comfortable matchup right now.
No, definitely not. I don't think any team is a comfortable matchup. I mean, the worst team in your league is the White Sox, and even those don't feel like comfortable games. It feels like this team has to scratch and claw for every win, and then every loss is either a blowout or it's close, and then the bullpen comes in and gives it up, and then it's a blowout. It's a very weird, like you said, they just don't have an identity. Like, they're not a good offensive team. They're not a good bullpen team. And they're not really a great starting pitching team. So what are you? What are you great at? And right now it's kind of nothing. It's just a couple of guys in the lineup will go off at one time, and that makes their offense good. At times, back into their bullpen can be dominant, but the middle part is kind of a joke. And then their rotation, yeah, Garrett Crochet can go out there and pitch really well. He didn't in this series, but other times he goes out there and dominates, and then you've got question marks after him. So, yeah, they just don't have much of an identity. And for this soft of a schedule, for them to be scuffling and having to scrape by and not being convincing, that's a big concern. And look, I get it. There's a lot of people, oh, it's only April. You know, it's too early. I'll be concerned by Memorial Day. Okay, fine. I hope by Memorial Day they're still just behind the Yankees, because right now they're benefiting from Baltimore being off to a horrid start, Tampa being who they are, Toronto being who they are. Like, you're lucky Baltimore isn't firing on all cylinders just yet, because that could happen, and then you could find yourself in third or fourth place and maybe out of the playoff structure. So, look, it is early. April's not over yet. There's a lot of baseball left, but a seven-day stretch like this against the White Sox, and I'm sorry, the Mariners, who have no offense, and they put up how many runs against you this series? Like, they kind of put it on you. So that's a bit of a concern. And it's series like this where, yes, it's early, but you look at it and you go, no, it's now, like, we're heading into May. Like, it's time to start. Guys need to start picking it up, because we can't have this anymore. So,
that's hard to disagree with that.
Yeah, it's just frustrating. It's, again, like, I think last week we were previewing this entire week. We previewed the White Sox series. We previewed even a little bit of the Mariners. And we said, you should win 5 or 6 out of 7. And you didn't. You didn't do it. So that's, you know, you won 4. That's, and yeah, okay, it's 1 less or 2 less, but it's kind of a big deal. So
can you think of any come from behind wins this season? I mean, there must have been one or two, but I just feel like so often, like I was saying in the pre-show, sometimes when we've been down by one or two runs, it just feels like an impossible gap to bridge. We're just so cold, and we're not figuring it out as the game goes for the most part. So it's, that's got to change. Like, there has to be a sense of urgency. I mean, Jaren Duran's kind of picking it up. I think he's on a 12 or 13 game hitting streak now. He had two multiple hit games. I'd like to see him walk a little bit more, but just putting together some really good at-bats, not striking out a ton. Alex Bregman is crushing it. Had two hits in all three games, was 6 for 12, walked once, drove in five over the series. Actually, he had a home run today. I forgot to put that on there. But, yeah, I said in the pre-show, you know, you got a lot of problems when we're not talking about Alex Bregman's opt-out. And I know it's only April, but it should be on your mind, you know, as we get through these series. And I don't know. Let's just get into it.
Yeah. Let's get right into the pain. So we got our bottom five list for this week. Didn't think we'd be doing this, but here we are. So Terry, you are in the leadoff spot. Who would you have coming in at number five?
Number five, we've got Sean Newcomb. And he's been a guy I've been rooting for. Everybody likes a good redemption story. And he had a very good spring training. He's been up and down. The Red Sox have won two of his five starts so far. He's got a 4.43 earned run average on the season. And he's 0-for-3. Not that we really care about wins and losses, but went five innings, gave up eight hits, four earned. Three of those were, or actually, I think all four of those. Was that a grand slam by Crawford? I'm pretty sure it was. Or was it a three-run shot? Either way, Crawford buried him. Walked two, struck out eight, but the eight strikeouts looks good on paper, but they're still making contact. They're still putting wood, you know, onto the ball, and he's been scuffling. We've got Brian Baio back. Richard Fitz looks like he's close to being back. I would expect he's probably going to have a rehab assignment here, you know, within the next 10 days or so. And you got a kid named Hunter Dobbins that's pitched very well, has, I don't want to say elite off-speed stuff, but very plus off-speed stuff. If you look at his Savant chart, it's mostly red. If he could get some life on his fastball, I don't know where he could be better than Cutter Crawford, which I think is a fair enough bar to set. And then finally, you've got Lucas Giolito allegedly going to pitch next week against the Toronto Blue Jays. And that dude has been a mess. I don't think he's pitched more than three innings in any of his rehab appearances. He's going to have one more on Friday. I think he walked three in his last one, only went two innings, gave up three or four earned runs. He just does not look good. The strikeouts have been there, but even when he was trash the last couple of years, he was still punching guys out, but still hanging stuff over the plate and getting crushed. I think, was it in 2023, he gave up the most home runs for any qualified starting pitchers? So
he did. Yeah. Like 40 something. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was on three different teams, Chicago, Anaheim, and Cleveland. And Cleveland should be a pitching program that fixes you if you're fixable. Like, they've got one of the best programs in Major League Baseball. So I think Newcomb's days are numbered because they probably will activate Giolito next week. And he doesn't have options. Somebody asked me on Twitter, they said, why did Newcomb keep his spot in the rotation and not Dobbins? And I had to explain, well, you know, Dobbins has options, Newcomb doesn't. I said, if Fitz was on the active roster, when Bale got activated, you probably would have had to have DFA'd Newcomb, but you want to keep your depth as long as you can. So, and Newcomb, even this time out, still kind of gave you a chance to win, gave up four earned. But, you know, then the bullpen came in. We're not going to talk about Justin Wilson, but he gave up two or three earned. Just not a good outing from him. And then Weissert came in and was pretty shaky in that game. But I don't know. I mean, do you guys think there's another start for Newcomb, or do you think they'll DFA him imminently? I think he's got one more tops.
Even if he doesn't start, I don't think he gets DFA'd yet. I think there is a chance he becomes that mop-up guy role. I know they sent down Winkowski yesterday after throwing 80 pitches. So I don't think we'll see him for a while, and he wasn't very good while he's been down here. So that role is open. Zach Kelly's also down there, another guy they have been stretching out, trying to stretch three innings out of. So I think Newcomb will transition into that role temporarily, at least for the time being, and then Giolito will take the spot, and then Cutter Crawford, once he comes back, I think there will be a DFA time. You'll think about DFAing Newcomb at that time.
When Crawford comes back?
I think they'll keep him over Winkowski. I just think they like his length. I think they like his slurve sweeper thing. I think it's very good. That's it. That's all he's got. The fastball is very hittable. He doesn't throw very many strikes. He gives up a lot of base runners, but he somehow gets swings and misses, especially the lefties with that big, slow breaking ball that he has. So they think he has some sort of value, I think. So I think he'll stay and stick on. But I don't think he's got many starts left, and I think he gives away too many base runners to be an everyday starter, or at least in the rotation going forward.
Fair enough. I hadn't really considered the long relief part yet, but we don't really have one other than, Whitlock for a couple innings. But
I mean, Jason. And yeah, Chris Will has to stay down. So if they bring him up, you would have to DFA Newcomb. I don't think Newcomb's really going to get snatched up unless there's a pitching injury somewhere. So you never know. He could clear, but at this, he's a little bit older. I know he's a Massachusetts guy, so he might want to stay, but you never know.
Yeah, I think Newcomb will keep a spot on the roster at least a little bit, even if it is just as a swing guy, maybe the sort of Rich Hill, James Paxton kind of role. I think he's an upgrade over what those guys were. But yeah, I mean, obviously when Crawford comes back, there's going to be a real discussion of like, you know, who gets bumped out? What does your rotation actually look like? And where is Cutter Crawford at that point? Like, is he ready to go? Is he going to be fully back, or are there going to be setbacks? Because, you know, it's been a long time for him to be out. So the Cutter Crawford thing will be a big part of what happens to Newcomb, but I think he'll stick around. I agree with Nick. I don't think that if you DFA him, I don't think anyone's going to really be, you know, chomping at the bit to pick him up. Maybe a team that's desperate that, you know, if a starter goes down, they want to pick him up just for depth or just as a guy who can eat innings. But I think you're good. I think you can safely kind of hang on to him and just kind of figure it out from there. I still think he's a good depth piece. He's not a starter for a playoff caliber team. That's really what it comes down to. If he was on the Marlins, he'd be their number four starter every time out, and they let him do his thing and it wouldn't matter. But you're on a team that's aspiring to go to the playoffs. So it's, you know, it's different. But that doesn't mean that he'll lose his spot on the team. I think he'll stay. It's just not as a starter. I think you guys are right that him actually starting games, meaningful games for you, those days are probably gone. And at this point, it's just, what can we do? You know, are you a stretch guy? Are you a long reliever, spot starter, whatever? But there's still use for a guy like that, even though he doesn't have electric stuff, but he's a lefty. He's kind of a crafty lefty, I guess, if you want to put it that way. There's always kind of a spot for a guy like that, especially on a team like this that, you know, you can never have too much pitching depth. Because there's a lot of injury concerns in that rotation to begin with. So I'm not looking to jettison Newcomb off the roster anytime soon. But I think his days of starting, hopefully, are done slash numbered. So I think we can all agree on that. So with that, we will move to number four on our bottom five. Nick, this is your guy. Who do we got?
We got Christian Campbell. He only played in the first game and the third game. He sat in game two. We'll get to that later with someone else on this bottom five. But he went 0 for 8 with 6 strikeouts. And at least in the finale, he looked overmatched with fastballs up in the zone. Brandon Wu was consistently sitting there at like 96, just above the hands, around the hands area. And he couldn't catch up to it. And he just looked overmatched, looked like he was supposed to be in AAA. I know he's been great all year, but this is a series where he kind of looked overmatched. Another point I wanted to bring up was he's played center field in game three here. And I don't have the stats like pulled up at the moment, but he's been awful when playing center field. I think I saw a tweet out there today. He's been pretty solid as an everyday second baseman. He has one game in left field where he hit a home run and hit a double. I think that was first game in Texas. And then in center field, he's been horrendous. So I think he's not comfortable out there. I don't know why Cora keeps sticking him out there. He had a ball off the wall in the first inning against Crochet today that kind of got past Campbell. And I think if Duran or Rafael were out there, they easily scoop that up. They get it in, and only one run scores there. And then if you think about it, it's a 3-3 game in the ninth, and there's the chance the Red Sox are winning this series instead of losing it. It wasn't an error. It's not like it was a terrible play out there, but it was a ball that a really good center fielder would get in front of, read the ball off the wall, and get it in quicker and probably stop that last run from scoring in the first inning there.
Terry.
I don't think we really need to mess with Campbell. You know, I mean, they're doing it to put David Hamilton in the lineup, and they seem to prefer Hamilton over Rafaela. So when that all has to happen, Campbell stays in the lineup, albeit in center field. Rafaela sits. I thought Rafaela had been playing better lately. You know, I was just kind of looking through my notes in the past series. Last 15 games, Rafaela is hitting .292 with a .370 on base. Last 15 games. I don't need to see David Hamilton in this lineup. I don't care if I ever see him again, quite frankly. Keep Campbell at second. Keep Rafaela in the outfield. That's your best defense. I mean, you've got three gold glove caliber guys out there with Duran, Rafaela, and Abreu. I don't mind, none of us mind Ref Snyder hitting against lefties, but it's Abreu that sits in that case. You're just a better team. And Campbell was 0-for-8 in the series, like Nick said. Golden Sombrero today with 4 strikeouts. He'll be a lot more locked in and a lot more focused if he's just playing his normal position. And look at second base over since Pedroia retired. I mean, we've mentioned this in previous shows. You finally have a bona fide second baseman that can at least play the position at an average level, not commit errors, you know, on a nightly or weekly basis. And he's got immense offensive upside. You have not had that in a long time. So don't mess with it. Don't mess. Why are we messing with that?
I completely agree. I hate seeing Christian Campbell in the outfield. Like, why do you need to put him in the outfield? Why? You have a guy, the number one prospect in baseball, who's bashing down the door, who's going to take one of those outfield spots. It's not like you need to force him out there. Like, if he was taking reps at first base, I'd get it. Okay, yeah, sure. Like, anything to get the weirdo out of the first base. But no, it's not that. They keep putting him in the outfield. It's not a good fit. And I think it's more they overvalue him as an athlete. He's a good athlete, don't get me wrong. But he's not Sadan Rafaela. You can't just plug him anywhere and be like, yep, we're going to get average to above average defense. No, even at second base, he kind of looks lost. This kid does not have a natural position, and that is on the organization. Don't get me wrong. It's not Christian Campbell's fault. It's on the organization because they kept screwing around with him even before they called him up. He was playing second base, shortstop, left field, center field, DH. They had him all over the place. Spring training, they put him in left field 2 games in a row. Then they benched him, put it second base 2 games after that. Then they DH'd him. Like, they've been throwing this kid all around the field. It's like, pick it and stick it. Put him at second base and keep him there. And I'm with you on Hamilton. I'm done with the David Hamilton thing. He's a pinch runner at this point. That's it. He had a good year last year before he got hurt. He showed a little bit of pop offensively. But at the end of the day, he's a 28-year-old journeyman who was thrown in as part of a trade because the Brewers didn't want him. That's who he is. All due respect. But that's who he is. And Alex Cora has this weird obsession with getting David Hamilton into the lineup. Like, what more do you need to see? It's not happening. Yes, he has really good speed. It's pretty much his only attribute. So I'm kind of done with the Hamilton thing, and I hated seeing that lineup in the finale. Like, Campbell in center, Hamilton at second, Rafaela out of the lineup. Rafaela has, like, finally started to slowly pick it up with the bat, and you're going to bench him in the series finale with a day off tomorrow? Like, it just, why? What's the point? It just makes no sense. So, and in terms of Campbell, he needs to learn that, yes, you have a unique swing. It doesn't mean that you can get to every pitch. You're not Vlad Guerrero Sr. Because I see him trying to go after, like, these two seamers at his knees, and he tries to do the quick cut, like, uppercut swing to get to it, and he misses. And there's only a few hitters in the league that can get to that. It's not like, yeah, your bat swing and your, you know, all of that is really good. It's not that good, though. And it's frustrating because he is good at taking pitches. He'll work a full count. He'll go to 3-2, but then he'll swing at a pitch like that's like about to hit his kneecap. And you're like, dude, like, you gotta just, and look, it's hard because in terms of plate discipline, he has been pretty good. He's been taking his walks. He hasn't been too bad. But a series like this, where he strikes out that much, you kind of see it a little bit. You see the inexperience where he feels like my swing can get to anything. And this is a good learning moment for him where you go, no, it can't. Like, it's not yet, right? Maybe in a couple of years, sure. But for right now, you can't get to those pitches. You've got to either lay off or, you know, again, similar to Tristan Casas, if you see a pitch in the zone that you really like, swing at it. You don't have to look at it. You don't have to wait for this perfect pitch. If that's good for you, swing at it. Go for it. Because you've got the natural power. Go ahead. Swing away. So I don't know if that's part of their hitting philosophy of, nope, work the count as much as you can and then wait until the last pitch to go for it. I don't know. But they got to figure something out with him because it feels like they're screwing around with his position and they're screwing around with his approach at the plate. Like, they want him to take pitches, they want him to take walks, but they also want him to swing away at the weirdest times. And I don't know if that's a messaging thing or if it's more just he's super young and he's still trying to figure it out. Maybe a couple months from now, he's not doing that. I don't know. But the strikeouts were a concern this series for sure. And when you see him go up against good pitching like the Mariners have, that's where you kind of look at it and go, was it too soon? And I don't think it was. I owned it. I did the mea culpa. I said from the start on this show in spring training, he should start in AAA. I was wrong. He had a really good start. He's had a good April for the most part. It was one bad series. I'm not going to bash again and say send him down, right? But I just hope that we're not going to get into a stretch where he's pressing and he's starting to swing at bad pitches because I haven't had a hit in 3 or 4 days. That's what I worry about, especially with a kid that young who accelerated so fast through the organization. So bad series for Campbell, but am I super worried? No. But in a month, if it's kind of the same, and he's, you know, that average is down to like 200 and the strikeouts pile up, then I'll be concerned. For right now, I just think he's a young kid still finding his way. Bad series, unfortunately, it gets highlighted because, you know, you're one of the key bats in this lineup, unfortunately. Like, it shouldn't be that way, but the 21-year-old or however old he is like a central part of your offense because no one else is doing anything. So it gets highlighted. It sucks, but it's the way it is.
I want to say one thing about his defense. If the Red Sox, for some reason, think he's an everyday outfielder, which I don't think they do. I think he's a second baseman, but he does not have the arm to play outfield every day. Not at all. He has a subpar arm. He cannot play center field at Fenway Park. He cannot throw from the triangle to second base. He has no chance to reach it. He like four hopped it today. He just doesn't have the arm. He's a second baseman. That's where he should stick at. I don't know if it's an Alex Cora call. I'm pretty sure it is an Alex Cora call. I don't think this is a Craig Rezo call saying, oh, we want the guy we just locked up to play multiple positions. I think this is definitely Alex Cora. But there's no reason for him to do it. He doesn't have the arm. He's a second baseman. He needs to learn to play second base. He's not great there yet either, but he's not good at all in center field. And the arm's a problem.
It just seems at times, and I noticed it today in a couple at bats, he was just way off. Like he doesn't seem to have a plan sometimes. Like he's not anticipating how the pitcher is going to attack him. And, you know, hopefully that's just a temporary thing. And, you know, he gets back on top of it. The first, I don't know, three or four series, he was amazing, like on top of everything. And, but, you know, like Jason said, I mean, he's still taking his walks. His on base is close to 100 points higher than his average in the last couple of weeks. You know, he's hitting, I think, 236 with a 320 or so on base. So it's not like he's up there free swinging, but you'd like to see him get a little bit more locked in. Is Peter Fatsy? I mean, you see people call for his job here and there, but coming into the season, I mean, I'm a big Peter Fatsy guy. I mean, Jaron Duran had an insane breakout under, you know, Peter Fatsy. Rafaela wasn't terrible last year. I mean, he didn't take any walks, and he is a bit of a free swinger, but he was adequate for a nine-hole hitter. Just looking, I mean, Abreu has been good in spots. Hamilton, I mean, I think we can all agree that last year was a bit of a flash in the pan, but it took place under, you know, Peter Fatsy's coaching. So I don't know. I don't think it's a Peter Fatsy thing. We got Chatham Charlie in our comments down there. Charlie had a stat earlier, and I couldn't fact check it, but apparently Tristan Casas only has two hits against starting pitching. All the rest of his hits are against the bullpen. And yeah. I had people shaming me for not giving him praise, Tristan Casas, that is, on the Twitter account for the two home runs. 2018 Cushman would have been like, yeah, he did hit two home runs, but neither one of them helped us win because we were going to win the first game anyway, and we lost the second game. So anyway, but yeah, so I don't know. We'll see, but I'm not on the fire Fatsy wagon right now.
I'm not either. As many faults as the 2024 team had, they were a good offensive team. And like you said, Duran, a couple of other guys, like they took offensive steps forward last year under him. So I don't think it's a hitting coach problem. I think it's, I don't know, April malaise, early season malaise. I don't know. I mean, you're facing some bad teams, so you should be hitting pretty well, but I don't know. We'll see. So with that, we're going to move to number three on our bottom five, and this is one that I sort of wanted to highlight. I'm going with the manager, Alex Cora, and it's not he wasn't a major highlight this series, but again, we sort of brought it up, like seven games against the White Sox and the Mariners, a really horrid team and a team that you should be better than. You should have won 6 out of 7. You came away with 4, 3 of which were against the White Sox, which any team in the American League can do. Okay, most of them would have swept the White Sox. And it's just, there are different things, like putting Christian Campbell in center field, forcing David Hamilton into the lineup. Like, what is the obsession with David Hamilton? I don't get it. Like, Sidan Rafaela, as I mentioned before, was just starting to finally get his feet under himself with the hitting, and he was starting to pick it up with the bat. You know his defense is going to be there. This is a young kid that you just gave an 8-year extension to, and you're putting him on the bench for David Hamilton, who hasn't done anything this year except for one home run that I can remember and a couple of stolen bases. And then the finale, the Crochet game. It's now the second time in the month of April that Garrett Crochet has set a career high in pitches for a single game. He's only been here for a cup of coffee, and you've already had 2 career highs in pitches for a single game in April. Like, I get it. You want to win? That's fine. I get it. I want my manager to want to win too. But you just locked this guy up to a huge contract extension, and he's had injury history, and you go through his, even back to his college days and all that. Like, he barely pitched in the minor leagues before Chicago called him up. This is not a guy who has a track record of pitching a lot of innings at any level. And already you're burning him out in April in a game against Seattle that, let's face it, you were going to lose that game regardless. Whether Crochet pitched that 5th inning or not, you were going to lose that game. Your offense had nothing. You had no answers for Brian Wu. Seattle's bullpen is pretty decent after that. Like, you had no answers. And his control was kind of all over the place. Like, he had 5 walks and 5 hits. Yeah, he had the 9 strikeouts, and a lot of people focus on that. That's great, but the 9 strikeouts kind of came later in the game. Like, he kind of found a groove late and started punching people out, but before that, I mean, I think he threw 24 or 25 pitches in the first inning, and then, like, another 24 in the second inning. He was cashed by the 4th inning. And, yeah, he started punching people out, but by then it was too late, and Cora just left him in there. And I get it. And the Nesson broadcast certainly shoved it down our throats. Well, Winkowski threw 80 pitches the other night and they sent him down, so the bullpen is limited. I don't care. Figure it out. Guerrero, you just called Guerrero up. I don't know when he last pitched, but figure it out from there. Like, have guys come in, just do something. This is your ace, and you're going to burn him out in April in a game that you're probably going to lose anyway. It was another example of, like, are you behind the wheel, Cora? Like, are you here? Are you on the pulse of this? Or are you just sitting here going, I don't want to lose the series because I don't want to face the media. So, Garrett, please give us a 5th inning and hopefully we'll rally after that. Like, that's where there are times where I think Cora pushes the right buttons and he's on it. And then there are other times like this series where I'm like, you're not on it. You're just so desperate not to lose the series that you're going to make a stupid decision. And I think leaving Crochet in for that many pitches was a stupid decision. So between the stupid lineups, David Hamilton, Romy Gonzalez playing way too much, it's just, I know it's April, but can we at least pretend like we want to win? I don't know. It really bugged me this week from Cora. So, Nick, how about you? Like, is Cora driving you up a wall yet, or are you still kind of okay with him?
I think with the Crochet thing, you're exactly right. Cora thought there was a better chance of winning with Crochet going through 5 than going with one of his worst bullpen arms, because he kind of wanted to get a bridge to – he'd go one guy, which was Hendricks, who was awful, and then Whitlock, Chapman, Slayton, or Slayton, Chapman, whatever combination there. But they didn't have the lead, and honestly, 110 pitches is too much for a guy who had 5 walks, which is, I think, a new career high. And he didn't look good. He was missing everything high and away. You know, the fastball and the changeup weren't great. He just didn't have the command he should have. And I know people were talking like he had a lot of swings and misses. He got up to 98.5 or something in the last inning. But I really don't care. I mean, he was hyped up to get those last guys out. He wanted to get through five. And no, that's a big deal for these starters. To look, 4 2/3 looks a lot worse than five innings. But you got to protect the guy you just invested in, like you said. So I think it was a bad decision. I'm not like fire Cora because of it. I know he wanted to win, and I'm not against that. But and I kind of agree with him. I think Crochet in the fifth inning was the best chance of getting out of it over one of your other mid rotation or mid bullpen guys. But you got to make a decision to protect your investment over winning a game. Like you said, it was probably unwinnable. I know they made it close at the end. And if you want to really get nitpicky, you could say that Campbell made a misplay in center field that kind of cost him a run. It might've been a play at the plate. It might've been the guy held up at third base. I think with two outs, you send him. So I think there would have been a close play at the plate, but a 3-3 game, you know, at home with the extra inning rules, you have some sort of advantage. You never know. You could win that game, and we're in a lot better mood right now. So Cora has made some bad decisions, like the Campbell decision out there in center field. He should play at second base every day. So, yeah, David Hamilton, I don't want to talk about him anymore. Pinch run late in games, that's it. That's always useful for if you're going to keep starting him, I don't want him on the roster. I don't think you need to DFA him or anything, but I'm fine with him as just the last guy on the roster. He pinch runs when needed, but he does not need to be found at bats. So, yeah, a little disappointed in Cora, and I'm not in the fire Cora range or, you know, part of it right now. I kind of agree with him. I want to win. That's why you left Crochet in, but you got to protect your investment. If it was like a 2-1 game in the fifth and he had 110 pitches, maybe I would think a little bit different, but he five walks on the verge of six, you know. I think it was time to move on from him in that game.
All right. I think unequivocally, this is the worst performance Alex Cora has had in any previous season in his tenure here. Now, he can turn it around. It's still pretty early, but he has the pieces for the most part to win games. And it's not happening at a good clip for the easy schedule that we have. And I don't know that he's managing the personalities right. I just feel like everyone's kind of on their own program. There's nothing, I wouldn't say there's any cancers in the clubhouse, but you know, you've got the Devers Bregman thing, and I think Devers is over it, but I don't think his head's in the right place. Duran's finally heating up, which is nice. Rafaela is finally heating up, which is nice. Campbell, as we've covered so far, this show is kind of going through the motions. Hopefully he figures it out, but it's not a team that's firing on all cylinders. And the other thing I've noticed is there seems to be a pregame plan that's set in place, and Cora won't deviate from that. I think today with Crochet going five innings, Cora just was not going to deviate from that. He's not managing on the fly like most managers do to correct in-game problems that arise when the plan starts to go off course. He's not pivoting. He's not managing the problems during the games. I don't think I like Garrett Whitlock only being available every third day because he goes two innings. There was at least one game, I think it might have been, oh, I got my notes right here. Yeah, so it was game two. And admittedly, I'm not going to lie, I did fall asleep in game one. And only just today did I realize that Hendricks pitched the ninth inning of game one and not Chapman. Because as I was fighting to stay awake, Whitlock was about to come in and I knew it would be for two. And then I'm like, well, Chapman will come in if we have the lead. And that didn't happen. I think Casas had already hit that home run, so he didn't really have to go with Chapman. But what I'm getting at here is with Whitlock burned for two innings in game one, you've got Sean Newcomb pitching game two, and you're lucky if he goes five. So how do you get through the next four innings without Whitlock and possibly Chapman? I mean, if that was a close game, Chapman would have been burned because Cora's not pitching him in back-to-back games. The data just isn't good when Chapman goes back-to-back. So let's just say Chapman was burned. Now you've got Newcomb and you've got Slayton somewhere in there. That's your only solid high leverage guy. And I know Zach Weissert is off to a good start, but he was last year and then he was trash. He couldn't even stay on the team. They kept sending him back and forth to Worcester. He scuffled a little bit. Must've been game one there. Wilson kind of got that party started, as I mentioned, and Weissert, you know, things looked like they had the potential to go sideways there as well. But what I'm getting at is there's a plan pregame and Alex Cora isn't coming off of it. And that's not what we're used to. We're used to a manager with high IQ that can pivot, that can get creative and think on his feet. And we're just not seeing it. And I don't like the way things are constructed right now. And we've already mentioned there's no reason to see David Hamilton. I don't want to see him until October, until we need a pinch runner in the playoffs, and he has options. So you can literally do that. And you're not messing with your postseason lineup as much as you are right now, you know, just desperately trying to get Romy in for a game and Blake Sable. He would never start a postseason game. So there's no reason. And then getting to the crochet thing, only one pitcher has pitched more innings than him, and it's not even a full inning. It's one third of an inning. Zach Wheeler, he's pitched 37 and one third innings. Crochet is second in all of Major League Baseball with 37 innings. That's like, and let's not forget, we're just looking at the season here. I mean, how many innings, you know, 200 used to be the benchmark. Now I think it's 160 or 180. Well, he's going to blow past that at this rate. And then guess what? He might have to pitch in October. So that's going to jack the innings up. Your management here. What happened to load management? You're down by two. Just get him out of there. I don't know who else was available. I mean, Weissert came in, Hendricks came in. I don't know if you can get more than two innings out of Guerrero, but he did go two. I don't know who else is available, but you can't blow out your ace's elbow here. Alex Cora sucks in 2025, and that's just the cold hard truth. And Nick says, you know, I'm not going to put up fire Cora hashtags. I'm not either, but I wouldn't hate it if it happened. It's not going to happen in year one of his extension. So it's useless for me to, or any of us to really go that route. But we've generally been either a neutral Cora or a pro Cora podcast. We haven't certainly been a negative Cora podcast, but that's the way it's trending. He has not had a good April.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to point out. I know he just got the extension, and I agree with you guys. I'm not going to start, you know, hashtagging fire Cora. I'm not at that point yet, but he has to figure out. I know he's got a bunch of new pieces in there, like, you know, Crochet's a new piece. The bullpen has a few new pieces. He's got to figure it out, though. Like, come on. Like, I don't want to be having this conversation in May. Like, if it's April, fine. You're still okay. You're still over 500. Like, You're okay. Baltimore is kind of struggling right now. You have time to figure it out. If we're having this kind of discussion by Memorial Day about Cora and his bullpen management and his management of Crochet, then I'd have concerns. Because then it's like, what are you doing? Like, do you know what you're doing? Are you going to protect your assets? Are you going to do it the right way or what? Like, again, I get he wanted to win today, but you were down 4-2. Crochet was clearly laboring. Just take him out and figure it out after that. Just at some point, you have to just sort of live to fight another day. And I know as a fan, that's hard to do because you want to win every game. But as a manager, you kind of have to think that way, especially in late April. Like, you got a lot of baseball ahead of you with your ace, Garrett Crochet. Let's not blow out his shoulder on April 25th in a game against the Mariners. Can we not do that, maybe? That's just, you know, that's kind of where I am. So I'm not, like, all the way down on Cora, but he's been in our bottom five, I think, twice now, maybe three times so far to start the season. So it's got to be better than that, for sure. So we'll move on from the manager. We'll go back to some of our position players here. So, Nick, who is number two on our bottom five?
I know he had a great series last series against the White Sox. He had a two-homer game, but Trevor Story was awful. Straight up, 0 for 12, 7 strikeouts, tons of swing and miss, come up in big spots the last two games in both losses and just struck out. And, you know, you got to put the ball in play sometimes. He doesn't have the ability to lay off those sliders, sweepers, whatever you want to call it, in the other batter's box. And he goes through a lot of these hot and cold stretches. It's going to happen all season as long as he's healthy. I know he's had a good start to the year, but we're going to have these stretches where we're complaining about these 1 for 25s or 0 for 15s with Trevor Story with 10 strikeouts. And it's going to happen, but he's also going to have those two homer games that he just had. So it's tough to complain. You know, he's healthy so far, but honestly, I don't think the defense has been as great as we thought he has been, would be at least at this point. But nothing to really complain about this series, but I just think he's been underwhelming, especially in the clutch. I think he's had a couple chances this series at least to add a run with like a bloop single or something. Just make contact, move a runner over, get a guy to scoring position. He can't do it because he's swinging and missing on these sliders by a foot and a half, 18 inches, and he's just not even close. So Trevor Story, just if you're 0 for 12 with 7 Ks, you're going to be in the bottom five.
Terry, what do you think about Story?
I said in the early week show with Charlie and Jeremy, I don't know what's real life with him yet. I think he was hitting 310 coming into the series. He slipped down to 297. I suspect he's probably going to settle down to about 240, 250 by the time all is said and done. Maybe he'll end up being a 2080 guy, but I just don't like his makeup at the plate. He has, you know, put the team on his back a few times, as Nick said. You can credit two of the Chicago series wins, you know, to him. But it's going to be fascinating to see what happens to him when Meyer gets called up. And you guys pointed out before he came on, I mean, he's hitting what, around 400 or so the last 10-12 games, and I think you're going to want to see him sustain that for a little bit more. I don't think he's imminently going to be up. Like, I feel like Anthony could be up any day. And by the way, apparently he had a shoulder thing going on, so he was DHing or something, and he only returned back to right field in the last few days. So that's probably part of the reason we haven't seen Anthony. But getting back to Meyer, I don't know what you do with Trevor Story. You could put him at first, maybe. I don't know. Casas, I know he hit two home runs, and I hope he heats up because it's a different looking lineup if Casas is hot. But I don't like Casas's approach. It's not a very good situational approach. He's just trying to kill the ball every time, and a lot of them end up dying out by the warning tracks. A couple of them have left the yard, but you know, guys like him will run into those. That's what Rowdy Tellez does. That's what Joey Gallo did for, you know, a number of years. So Casas needs to get more dynamic as a hitter. But I've said recently, you can't put Trevor Story in the witness protection program like you have with Masataka Yoshida. The optics of that are going to be way worse. And so I don't know. I don't think you can have a $22 million a year guy on your bench as a utility guy either. So maybe you can put him at first base. And then I don't see how Campbell goes to the outfield once Anthony comes up. So there's just, you're stuck with him. And if he could just heat back up, maybe you can move him. And if you're lucky, only have to eat half of his contract. Maybe you have to eat more than that. I don't know. But I just, hopefully he just figures it out, gets a little bit more serviceable. But the guy does not walk. I mean, if Seydon Rafaela is walking more than you, that's a problem. That's a big problem. So we'll see. But 0 for 12 was painful. He's hitting in the 4 or 5 spot. You can't have that minimal production in that area of your lineup. You're going to lose a lot of baseball games. You're going to strand a lot of base runners. And I don't know if he's going to figure it out against Cleveland because they can pitch. So.
Yeah, Trevor Story is, he represents a double-edged sword because we always complain that the lineup is too left-handed, which it still usually is. And we complain they strike out too much. Trevor Story strikes out too much. But he's right-handed, and when he is hot, he does provide pop in that bat. Now, I hate to say it, a lot of his home runs are off, like, meatballs. Like, he's not digging out the pitch that's like down and in and driving it out the way that like an Alex Bregman can do, right? Most of the home runs, if you go back and look, it's like a hanging breaking ball and he just smashes it. Anything over 96 miles an hour, he's late. He's either fouling it off or he's late on it. And then he's always going to chase that breaking ball down and away. It's just, it's his Achilles heel and pitchers know that. So look, I think a healthy contributing Trevor Story is still good for this team. Now, is he going to hit 300 at his best? No, of course not. The regression to the mean is already happening. Like, these people, some of you on Twitter are so funny. Like, they think that now that he's healthy, oh, just wait, you're getting MVP Trevor Story. No, you're not. He's a career 266 hitter. This is a guy who played in Coors for half his career. Like, no, he's not that. He's going to be low average, high strikeout. As Terry said, he doesn't walk. And yeah, you hope that he runs into a 3-run blast every now and then. That's who he is. In terms of his defense, it's okay. His arm sucks as a shortstop, but Lord knows he's not the only one. So I guess you kind of live with it. You just hope that, you know, Tristan Casas can pick them at first base, which, that's always a coin flip, so who knows? But his defense isn't terrible either. I mean, we've seen worse play that shortstop position. We've seen David Hamilton try and do it. So it's not the worst, but it's not great either, right? It's just sort of good enough. In terms of him versus Meyer, that's going to be the biggest struggle for this organization because now that Meyer is heating up, we saw how good he was defensively. He's so smooth with everything he does. And the fact that he's hitting for power, he had a home run off a lefty the other day. The fact that Meyer's a lefty, it may not matter. But the trouble is, are you going to trade Trevor Story? If you're competing for the playoffs and Trevor Story, let's say by the deadline, he's hitting 250 even with 20 plus homers, right? And yeah, the strikeouts are high, but he's still stealing bases and he's still playing adequate defense. Is that a guy you trade for a team that wants to get back into the playoffs for the first time and feels like forever it hasn't been, but you know what I mean? That's a hard sell. And look, if you get a team that's like, yeah, we'll take him and the full contract, oh, you do it. Like, sure. Because I've said from the beginning that the best case scenario is that Trevor Story goes off this year, helps you get into the playoffs, helps you maybe get to the ALCS or whatever, and then he opts out. And for lack of a better term, he Fs off. And you give the job to Marcelo Meyer next year. And he goes and signs a stupid contract with St. Louis or whoever, right? Some stupid team that's going to overpay him. But trading him at the deadline, I don't know if you can do that. If he's one of your better right-handed power options by July 30th, I don't think you can do it. Even if Meyer is hitting 420 down in AAA, like, I'm not sure you can do that. Because, yeah, Meyer's dominating AAA, but what if you call him up and he has a kind of experience that Tristan Casas did, where he comes up to the majors and he looks lost. And all of a sudden, you're in a wild card race and you have a black hole in your lineup because Meyer's not quite ready. So it's a very delicate balance with what they have to do with Meyer and Story, because I think even they know this is not who Trevor Story is. What we saw this past series is a little bit more, right? The, you know, the strikeouts, the over 12, that was bad, right? But what he was at the beginning of the season, that's not who he is either. He's not this 350 hitter who's going to hit a home run every game and steal a base. And, you know, he's not that. So they have to sort of balance it of like, we want to win now. We have to, and we want to make the playoffs this year. But we've got this kid, Marcelo Meyer, who had a great spring, struggled at the start of AAA. Now he's heating up again. And Trevor Story just went over 12. Like, it's going to be a constant back and forth. My guess is that Story is on the team the whole year. They don't trade him at the deadline. They ride it out. They hope he stays healthy. Because, honestly, it sounds horrible. The easiest solution is that Trevor Story gets hurt again. And then, boom, Meyer's up. That's it. Obviously, no one wants that. But given his history, it's pretty likely, right? So their hope is that he stays healthy, contributes, gives that right-handed power, and then he has a good year, and he goes, you know what? I want to test the open market. I opt out. Good. Bye-bye. Marcelo Meyer, you're now the Red Sox shortstop. That's what I think they want. So it's tough. Like, you see a series like this, and everyone clamors for Marcelo Meyer, and I get it. I do, too. But given what Story did the first couple weeks of the season, I don't want to just dump him off for a bag of balls. Like, I'm not in that category yet with him. Yeah, it's frustrating. The strikeouts are frustrating. The chasing the breaking ball down and away every single time is really frustrating. But when this guy's on, he can catalyze your offense. He really can. And given the fact that he has to hit, what, fifth in this lineup, the way it's designed or whatever, like, you kind of need him to keep going. So, frustrating series for Story, but I'm not ready to just, you know, blow him out the door and just hand the job to Meyer just yet. Meyer's had a good 7 to 10 days. Let's see how he is in June, July. Because Meyer's got the same injury bug, too. Is Meyer going to be healthy in July, or is he going to be on the IL? Those are fair questions to ask with him, too. So I'm not ready to, like, Story can be frustrating, but I want to try to ride it out with him as much as possible. Because if he can stay healthy and, I don't know, go on a streak at the right time, he can be really helpful for you. So frustrating week for him for sure. But as Nick said, he's a streaky hitter. He was in Colorado too. It's just, you have to get used to that. It sucks. It's not great. Tyler O'Neill was a streaky hitter. Tyler O'Neill went through streaks last year where he didn't hit anything. He went 0 for 18 with like 10 strikeouts. But was he valuable? Yeah, he was. He was so valuable that Baltimore took him on. I haven't kept up with him, to be honest. I don't know how he's doing over there. But, you know, that's just what these kind of players are. They're streaky, but it doesn't mean they're completely useless. So, tough series for Story, but I'm not ready to just jettison him off to Siberia and give Meyer the job. I don't think Meyer's just, I don't think he's quite ready yet.
The thing that is just so tantalizing to me is Meyer has a chip on his shoulder. Like, he was a little bummed he got sent down. He was your best of the big three prospects in spring training. And so if he can carry that up and kind of use that as a spark to get his career started, I don't know. I mean, I think Meyer has the much higher ceiling, probably, offensively and defensively. Story perhaps has the better floor, and, you know, he's a big voice in that clubhouse. So That's what it is, but I just don't think it's like each one of them are their own beast and you just can't tame the beast. Like once they just start crushing it down there, I don't see how you can keep them down there. So, and one other thing on Story, if he had four more strikeouts than he does, he's currently 11th in Major League Baseball, tied with Austin Riley. If he had four more strikeouts than he does, he'd be tied at third with Raffy Devers. So the strikeouts are bad. The walks, the lack of walks, I don't know. But it's tough. It's tough.
Yeah, definitely is. And glad you brought up Raffy Devers, because might as well just round this thing out. Number one on our bottom five, Terry, who is it?
It's Devers. You know, 0-for-9 on the series. He did walk three times, drove in two on, I think, sack flies. But that's another dude not locked in, not really getting it done in the two hole. Jarren Duran, as I said earlier in the show, in the intro, has started to heat up. And he's getting on base in front of Devers, and Devers isn't really able to, you know, either drive in Duran or move him over to second or third. So you can't drop everybody in this lineup. You know, you already got Casas hitting seventh or eighth. I don't see how you can drop Story much more, even with the streakiness. So you look at all these close games. We lose by one today. We lost by one, I think, two or three times in the first week and a half of the season. If you just have Devers hitting at his career average, those are probably wins. Like, it's gotten to the point where I kind of expect Casas to struggle and get off to a slow start. That's what he's done every year of his career. I don't expect Trevor Story to carry this team. It's just, it's not realistic and it's not fair. And Bregman is pulling his weight, more than pulling his weight. I don't know if he's $40 million pulling his weight, but who really does? Who's a $40 million player? You know, even the guys making that right now, I don't think are $40 million players. Maybe Shohei. Okay, he's the only one. But Bregman is living up to what has been advertised, and Devers is hitting in front of him and he's just not getting it done. This team, I don't see a path to 90 wins if Devers is going to have the worst year of his career. And I know he's upset with how the early part of the season played out, and I feel the worst for him of any host on this crew, but he has to figure it out. He has to figure it out. And I've been a Devers apologist for a while. I've said for years and years, I'd rather have Devers over Mookie Betts in a big spot because I think he can handle it. But is there a day where I'm going to be anti-Devers? I don't know. I don't think so, but he's hitting 150 or so in his last 15 or so games. Let me get that up right here. The walks are great. I mean, I think he's towards the top of MLB in walks. Where are walks on here? Right here. Let's see. No, he's not on top, actually. Matt Chapman, Marcell Ozuna both have 24 walks on the year. Devers, Harper, and Schwarber are tied for third. So nonetheless, Devers is up there with walks. It's not a mechanical thing. He's seeing the ball fairly well. Today in the finale, they fed him almost all exclusively four-seam fastballs, and he couldn't put them in play. So, and he's gone through stretches where he just gets so heavily reliant on hunting the off-speed stuff and crushing that he kind of gets lazy with the fastballs. he doesn't, you know, that's just something he, I don't think he loses focus on, but I think he just focuses so much more on the changeups, the sliders, the curveballs, and what have you. And he's got to be more well-rounded. He has to win the chess match against those pitchers. That's what David Ortiz did so well. David Ortiz always won the chess match. He always anticipated how they were going to attack him, and he attacked them. And we're not seeing that consistently against with Devers. So I'm putting these close losses on him because he's the superstar. He's the $300 million man. And, you know, I expect him to put this team on his back. And Bregman's been doing it. And if you could get them just firing on all cylinders in the 2 and 3 hole with Jaron Duran heating up in front of them, you would win a lot more games. So Devers, to me, shoulders most of the responsibility here.
Nick, what do you think?
I mean, yeah, Devers is the most important player on the team. He's the highest paid player on the team, at least contract-wise, not AAV. But, yeah, Devers has been terrible all year. Just, I'll call him terrible. He had, like, one good series against the Cardinals. He heated up. He had a couple big games there. But besides that series against the Cardinals, he's been bad. He has got 2 home runs. He's missing every fastball above, like, 96 miles per hour. I know you brought up the walks. He's got like a 333 on base, but he's batting like 190. So he's still taking his walks. He's up there with among the lead leaders in the walks. I think he's being overly selective, and then he's late on the fastball. And he's just not he looks uncomfortable up there. I don't think it has anything to do with the DH thing anymore. I think he's just gotten to his own head, and he'll eventually bust out of it. I just hope it's soon because – the team is struggling without him. Only 1 game over 500, still in second place somehow. But if they don't start winning, you know, 7 out of every 10 soon, these other teams are going to pull away. The whole American League isn't going to be just 500 forever. You know, so we'll see. Devers has been bad all year. That's why he's at number one. Maybe not stats-wise he's number one here, but he's definitely the guy the whole team looks up to lead them, deliver in a big spot, and he has not really come through at all this year. Besides the walk against Helsley, I don't remember him ever being clutch at all this year.
It's a great point, and I feel like he's kind of getting a pass from the fan base because of everything that went down with Bregman and his position change, and, oh, you know, they pulled the wool from his eyes, and, oh, Rafi has to be DH now, and he's not used to that. Like, I feel like he's gotten such a pass. And, look, don't get me wrong. Like, if you want to go after a guy like Tristan Casas, fine, yeah, go ahead. You know, there's plenty of blame to be shared, and we even do it on this show. Like, Alex Cora deserves blame. The bullpen, the starting rotation. Like, there are other guys who deserve blame. Trevor Story had a bad series, but I feel like Rafi Devers, Nick kind of put it out perfectly. It's like he had one good series, and then otherwise he's been the same mess that he was the first, what, 12, 13 games of the season, where we were all sitting there going, oh my God, they screwed him up. Like, they put him at DH and now he's lost. Like, what has happened here? And look, this is not unprecedented. There are other players who have been forced into a DH position that have struggled. And just a little tease, like Byron Buxton is one of them. He was DH in 2023 because he's had injury problems. He was awful offensively in 2023. And he admitted later on that he didn't like being a full-time DH. He didn't like having to sit in the dugout, you know, when his team was on the field. Devers is the same way. And you can see it when you watch the games. Like, if the Red Sox are winning and they're winning like 8-3, Devers is in the dugout. He's smiling. He's chewing his tobacco. He's happy. If they're down, especially if he goes up there and strikes out and they're still losing, he just goes back to the dugout and he's just sitting there going, what am I doing? Like, I can't do anything for the next couple of innings because I can't play the field and I got to wait for you know, Narvaez and Hamilton to strike out and, you know, whatever before I can get back up there. Like, it's got to be frustrating for a guy like that. I feel like this was all really forced on him just because of the Bregman signing. And I don't know. I don't know how quickly that goes away. Hopefully it's soon. Hopefully it's just, okay, bad April. Eventually he'll adjust, like you said, and he'll dig himself out of it. He's a good enough hitter to do it. We know he's a good enough hitter to do it. So that's not even a question. But mentally, like, is he going to have a Byron Buxton 2023 kind of year where, you know, by August he's still hitting 220. The strikeouts are still way up there. Yeah, maybe the walks are up there too, but the power is down and everything else is down. We're going, oh man, they really screwed him up. And then you've got the extra element of you've already screwed up your superstar. And then if Bregman opts out and you go, hey, Raffy, how do you feel about playing third base again, even though you haven't taken a single grounder for like a year over there? You good with that? Like, he's going to be like, what the hell? No. So that's where I go back to the whole plan of this whole thing. Like, the Bregman contract is set up for this to be a slight disaster if Devers doesn't get his head out of his rear end. Because if he's going to struggle as a DH offensively all year, and then Bregman opts out, and all of a sudden you got to go back to him and go, oh, by the way, you got to play third base again because we have no one else to put there. Like, you're setting yourself up for a really bad situation there. So, it's April. You know, it'll only be April for a few more days. So that excuse is going to dry up pretty fast. But, Memorial Day. I think that's a good sort of benchmark. If by Memorial Day, Devers is still whiffing on fastballs, the average is down, the power is down, I think it's time to legit have the conversation of, like, did you screw this up? As an organization, did you screw this up by forcing him into the DH position just to get Alex Bregman on the roster? That's, I think at that point, it becomes a legit question. And I hope we don't get to that point, but man, it's trending that way, and that's scary. And so the point I bring up about Buxton is, like, so he's back playing the outfield now. 2023, they DH'd him. He's back playing the outfield. His numbers went back up. 2024 and so far this year, numbers are back up. So, and that's a guy who, he had injury problems. We all know it. Byron Buxton is one of the most fragile players in the league, unfortunately. But they tried to DH him to preserve his health, and it screwed him up. So, you know, that's kind of a case study of what could happen to Rafael Devers. And again, I said it was a bit of a tease. We will have a sort of a short TikTok going up on our channel where we're going to talk about Byron Buxton and sort of how we feel about him and that whole situation. But it's fair to bring up, because when you screw with guys' positions like this, and this applies to Christian Campbell too, like, you screw them up mentally. Like, these are not just chess pieces you move around. This isn't MLB The Show. You can't just stick Devers at DH and be like, oh yeah, no, he's going to perform the same. It's not like that. And I just wonder if the organization really screwed it up by, you know, forcing the Bregman signing and just kind of being like, oh, Devers will handle it, he'll be okay. It's like, you don't always know that. I don't know. I just, again, it's early, but the Devers, him, the way he looks right now, it doesn't look good. It really doesn't. So
I think it goes back to Alex Cora. You know, he's not putting the pieces where they fit necessarily. He's trying to force them, you know, to fit in certain spots. And I just don't think this is it. You know, I think putting Devers at first would lift him up a little bit. You know, I think it could reignite a spark, but it's just, do you really want to, you know, either option Casas or move him? I don't know. I'm trying to, we'll get into it in another show, but some tough decisions have to be made. Go ahead, Nick.
One more thing about Cora. Starting Blake Sable is basically an automatic loss, in my opinion, at this point. I don't know whose decision this is going to be. Yasmani Grandal can't get here fast enough. I know you have to start your backup catcher, but Navarez is so much better than like Sable's not even funny. Like Sable is not a major league quality player. I don't know if he's a double A quality player at this point. He cannot frame. He cannot throw. You get the Mariners running all over everybody. You got the White Sox running all over him. He's just an automatic loss if he's in the starting lineup. I mean, he's that bad defensively. So I don't want him. Just get him off the team. I'd rather run Narváez into the ground.
Yeah. Grandal hit a home run the other day in Worcester. So, you know, if I'd rather have Grandal
with a broken hand than Blake Sable.
I you know, Narváez has been interesting. We'll get into him another show. But, you know, if he's the backup to Wong, I don't hate that. And maybe Wong could play some first base if you need him to, you know, once or twice a week. You know, if he's the platoon to Casas in some situations, then we'll see. Wong will be back, I think, within the next week and a half or so. They seem to think it's moving right along.
Yeah, can't come soon enough. Like, we need at least a little more stability at that catch position. So I'll take it. With that, we will wrap up this episode. So we've got our series prediction show coming up. And we've also, check us out on TikTok. We're starting to post on there a lot more. And obviously check out our other social feeds for any other shows we got posting up on there. We tend to record live and post live. And so if you're around, just come on in, join the chat, hang out. You know, we're always down for that. So we appreciate it. And we will talk to you guys later. Take care.